The Military Exchange Talk Show is a faith-based organization that attends to veterans' spiritual needs in areas of veteran health and wellness. We will talk candidly about veteran issues and how they relate to God's Word. This is your show to speak what's on your hearts and minds. I'm only here to facilitate truth and logic to my brothers and sisters who are on active duty, reserves, and veterans that have served this great country by putting themselves at risk on the front lines of freedom. So join me in a new way of thinking and healing and advocating for our men and women who need you, the veteran, even more today to be leaders in your own communities, to be godly parents, skillful workers, to be an example of citizenry with morals and ethos, and a true and loyal friend to the military veteran.
The Military Exchange.
Welcome to the Military Exchange Talk Show. I'm your host, Corporal Tim Thornton. First up, we have our sound bite from our live talk show Wednesday nights at 7 p.m. Later in the show, we'll tell you how to connect so if you can also be a caller. This is me stating how I see women in combat and the pros and cons, and then our caller. And as he talks, we kind of get into it, mix it up. We're bringing that segment to you on our weekend show. If you want to call up and debate the issues, Wednesday night, 7 p.m., go to our website, ironmikesmx.com, our Facebook page, the Talk Show Military Exchange podcast page, themilitaryexchange.com. Any of those will give you the avenue, the phone number, the time and date, and when to call. Or as you will be able to hear, we had a good time. And then after that, ISIS fighters among Syrian refugees, top UN general says, dogs of war, 11 lessons learned in Vietnam that will help you in your civilian career. Now after that, those three great stories, we're going to talk with combat comedian Dave DeFranco. And we had a great time interviewing Dave this past Monday night. You can see the video. It'll be up on our YouTube page, the Military Exchange Talk Show. And Dave told us about his efforts to help our veterans through humor and healing. And that's going to be a great segment. At the end, we're going to talk a little bit about God and why he gave man the beard. But first up, our excerpt from our live talk show this past Wednesday night, 7 p.m., Women in Combat.
Kim Shaggy DeChic Pet Spa, a natural choice in pet grooming, located at 1010 South Clinton Avenue in Rochester. We are your premier full-service pet salon. Call to make an appointment, 585-355-4761.
Introducing now, in the corner of Case's Mini Storage Plaza, wearing camouflage, boxers, and smoking a cigar, hailing from Canandaigua, New York, Corporal Tim Thornton's, the all-new The Military Exchange. The Military Exchange is proud to present over 5,000 feet of pure 100% military. The Military Exchange is your source for all your military needs and proudly supports active reserve and former military, VFWs, legions, and leagues, Boy Scouts, Sea Cadets, Civil Air Patrol, and your family. Presenting cigars fresh from our plantation in the Dominica, collectibles, t-shirts, hoodies, and ball caps, rank and insignia uniforms for parade, security, and law enforcement, camouflage clothing, outerwear, wool pants, parkas, and field jackets, camping backpacks, tents, and sleep systems, vintage clothing and gear, Class A's past and present, tactical and survival gear, antiques and airsoft, brand new and pre-enjoyed military camouflage and boots. Check out our military talk show at IronMikesMX.com. 5,000 feet to pure 100% military in Canandaigua, New York.
Good morning, America, and all the ships at sea. This is Corporal Tim Thornton from the Military Exchange Talk Show. Have you ever wanted to voice your opinion on today's issues? Veterans and patriots, do you have something to say? Well, I'm the facilitator, and it's your show. Call our live talk show every Wednesday night, 7 p.m. For details, go to themilitaryexchange.com. Weekends, check out our shows on this channel, 8 a.m. or 9 a.m. Sunday mornings from the Military Exchange Talk Show. Well, Welcome back to the Military Exchange Talk Show, and I'm your host, Corporal Tim Thornton. SEAL who killed Bin Laden says women deserve a shot at special ops. The former U.S. Navy SEAL known for killing Osama Bin Laden said he supports women serving in elite special operation units as long as they can meet the standard. But I don't think he's doing that tongue-in-cheek like the rest of the grunts are doing. Every grunt in the Marine Corps, and I was one, says, you know they can't carry the combat load. Well, they can, and they get hurt. They actually physically get hurt for the rest of their lives. That's an issue, but there's an issue around that. Robert O'Neill, who claimed credit for firing the deadly shots that killed the Al-Qaeda leader during a covert U.S. raid into Pakistan in 2011, appeared on Fox News to discuss the Pentagon's recent decision to open all direct combat jobs to women. I've operated with women. They have actually come with us on operations, O'Neill said. We use them a lot for some of the searching of women and children, cultural sensitivity type stuff. O'Neill was referring to a select group of highly trained women who served on the Special Operations Command Cultural Support Team. The pilot program was designed to train women and have them serve with special operations direct action units so they could gather battlefield intelligence by talking to Afghan women in situations where male soldiers had been unsuccessful. The pilot program outlined in Ashley's War, the untold story of a team of women soldiers on the special ops battlefield. Highly praised, high-ranking special operation leaders says it was all highly successful. There is definitely a place for women. There are certain types of intelligence and reconnaissance type stuff where women and men working together is better, said O'Neill. A decorated combat veteran who served with the United States Naval Special Warfare Development Group known as SEAL Team 6. Now I want to stop right there because there's the gist. Women have tried to go through Marine Corps infantry training. They've tried to go through Marine Corps officers infantry school. And they've tried to go through Ranger school. And some have graduated. And yet, there's always this little voice in the background of shame, shame. You didn't really test them the right way. But the women are carrying the combat load in the training. Combat load, for those that don't understand, you're talking all your ammunition and then your gear. And then you might just have to carry a base plate, or you might have to carry the spare barrel for an M60. I'm old school, so if I'm not saying M4 and I'm not saying all the modern stuff like that, bear with me. I can, I'm just not going to. So the weight's hard. But see, here's my argument to that. Once they do get through the school and they prove that they can carry it, because the combat load is also pretty much the same load or weight as your counterpart, your male counterpart that you got to carry out of a firefight so he doesn't bleed out. Those are the cons that make it tough. But the pros, here's the pros. You got a Navy SEAL saying it's possible. You can do it. We've used them. I say, this is my big answer, mobile infantry, helo company. I was Alpha Company 1-2. We were in the Gulf War. We went overseas. We were in the sand. You know what we did? We humped. Oh, boy, we humped. And if you're a grunt, you know what humping is. But we also took helos. And the special ops guys, you know they hump, but you also know they take helos. And I think that cuts out a little bit of the problem with a woman in combat. But what about you guys at home? I'm asking you to tell me, are you ready to see your daughter, your wife, your sister in combat? Because in combat, after combat, when Haji gets a hold of her and he kneels her down in front of all the world to see on some YouTube video and cuts her head off slowly with some kind of cheap butter knife machete that they must only buy in Pakistan, where are we now? Is the draft the right thing? The draft is tough. You got a guy, one set of politicians is saying draft them because they are going into combat jobs. So to be fair to the men, we've got to register now the women, selective service, which, by the way, costs $23 million a year just to host selective service for the men. I don't know, but maybe that price even doubles if you add all the women. 18 years old, you get right out of high school, you got to do the selective service. But we haven't used the draft since the Vietnam War, and that's a good thing. Truth is, we like our voluntary force. We really don't want the draft guys in there. The people say, well, that would be so good for America to have more draftees in the military so that everybody has a common ground. You're absolutely right. But you know what? I served with draftees. I served with conscientious objectors, and we really don't want you in the service. I liked it when I was in the all-volunteer military. That aside, women in combat and the draft, you got two factions, one saying no at the Congress level, and one is saying yes. And I think Senator McCain, of all people, is saying yes, that we should register women for the draft. Oh, we got a call, Dave from New York. Dave, if you could tell me where you are from in New York and what's your military affiliation, even if you're a legacy. Legacy is the person in the family who may not have served, but his father or his son did, or mother. Got to be fair.
All right. Yeah. Actually, I would be legacy. My dad, my brother, were veterans. Both of my children are veterans. But
so you've even,
I'm serving my own way.
Well, you've created a few legacies there.
Yeah, we have a few legacies, but my legacy is that I've, in the last 2.5 years, I've put a program together where we train veterans who are going through difficulties. We train them to do stand-up comedy to get their problems out, and we work with them. We hold their hands, and we find out their demons, and then they exercise them by finding a funny way of saying things they've never been able to get out, and once they feel good about what they're doing, we actually get them in fundraisers where they raise money for the veterans' causes, for the
all right,
veterans.
Dave,
that are
Dave,
homeless.
We got all that about the comfort kids and the combat veterans or the combat comedians, but the question is, how do you feel about women in combat?
Well, the thing is this: they are in need too of things, but women in combat is what turned a lot of things around. If you think about it, when in World War II, when the Russians were, you know, backing up and backing up Stalingrad and Leningrad and Moscow, the women were right in there.
Russian snipers. Women on the actual line, maybe loading, maybe firing as a sniper, they do have all those stories. German female snipers, Russian snipers.
Sure.
We've already got women that have shot well in combat. We've got Marine women in combat. But are you ready, Dave, to see a daughter beheaded on YouTube? You sure you want women to go into combat under the draft and actually get in there? We're talking all women, as long as they physically pass.
Well, what you're doing is, you know, there's different arms and legs of the military service, okay? Now, for example, my son, he's still in the Air Force in a part-time basis as a reservist, but he's still serving the country. He's going to be helping them engineer a radar station in Africa. But you know, the women can be in the service, and they can still. What says that? Why can't they run a tank? Why can't they be somewhat protected by being in an Abrams tank or something where they're not just right out there where it's going to come down to?
Tanks kind of in the middle of battle, Dave. Tanks right there. They blow up tanks. Tanks catch on fire. People burn to death.
But,
you know, again, you know, that's great. Women deserve the right, as the Navy SEAL was saying, they deserve the right to be in combat. They're American. They're red-blooded. I get that. I've met women that are military. They want to fight. They want to kill, to be quite honest with you. Our Marine women,
are fighters. They're killers. All you got to be, and this is a quote from an Italian Navy SEAL, a little cold-blooded, and you can kill. That's it.
Right.
And again, women in combat, though, how are they going to get there? You just don't. Sometimes, I guess if you're a tank, you could show up in your tank and drive all the way to the field. But if your tank goes kablooey and you got a guy next to you, can that woman carry that 185-pound man? And she's probably,
probably
150,
not.
140?
Okay. I think we could easily come up with scenarios where, based on size and strength, they could not compete. But on the same token, you could just easily come up with scenarios where their size and strength would not matter, because to do their job, it wouldn't be necessary.
Right. They could do that, because like women in combat, and the Marine Corps has already done this, where they've had complete women companies, 200 women, only women, so a woman would only have to carry out another woman on the battlefield, and firemen's carry, runner out to the corpsman, corpsman up. That's possible. That could happen that way.
Okay.
What about the female anatomy?
That's highly unlikely.
Well, we've already done that in the Marine Corps. Marine Corps is so far advanced on women in combat, it's crazy. We might as well be stormship troopers on Mars fighting ants, because the Marine Corps has already done all this, and we've been successful.
That's very good. I like what you did there. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, here's a question.
Don't forget, you're coaching me on this stuff. So, back at home. I know Dave. Dave's a great guy. He loves the veteran. I'm playing devil's advocate a little bit, kind of trying to get some oomph into this. Dave, I got to tell you, here's the problem. Women in combat load, 150, 200 plus pounds. Women have an anatomy problem. This is almost the cincher. This is why they can't be boots on the ground all the time.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You have a pelvis bone, correct?
I would hope so.
All right, good. Yours is completely together. It's 100% fused together. It's one piece. Women, I didn't know this. I only went to 8th grade health class. I never knew this until the other day, like this year. And every time I've mentioned it to a man, most guys go, huh? And they look at their wife, and the wife goes, yeah, honey, their pelvis is not together. And it doesn't connect. You know why it doesn't connect? Because that's the only way you can make a baby. Baby's got to come out through that way. So when their pelvis bone doesn't connect, they can't hold the weight, and they wind up damaging their hip. And then they're actually crippled, like a veteran crippled, you know, go to the VA with a crutch the rest of their lives, and they might only damage that hip in boot camp.
Well,
fair to put women in combat just based on that one physicality?
Well, I think you really, really. First of all, you got to look at what kind of a war are we into? What kind of engagement are we really, really looking at here? Is this total war? Is this where we are so backed into a corner that we're fighting for survival, or is it a police action? I mean,
no war is won without boots on the ground. No matter how many times you fly over and bomb them, we're proving that with ISIS right now. You can fly over and bomb all you want. You can bomb Hanoi. You can bomb Japan, Nagasaki. But eventually, you got to put boots on the ground. It's the only way.
Sure. I think you have to look at each scenario and say, we understand the limitations that the women have. So putting them in would almost have to be as a last resort, okay? Knowing the shortcomings that are bound to happen in some environment.
You just treated your women veterans terribly. The last resort? You're talking about like a weekend reserve kind of thing? When America's down and out and we got nothing left, so we send our kids and then we send our women? That's not what they want. Our women want to fight on the front lines first.
One of the things about anything in the armed services, the person who enlists, it's not about what they want, okay? That's why there's generals.
It doesn't work that way anymore. You get to sign a big, fat contract that says, I want to be a satellite technician, and you're going to send me to school because I got the grades, I got the ASVAB scores. I want to be a satellite technician so when I get out, I can work for Time Warner and fix satellite dishes on people's houses. Because that's usually what happens.
Great.
Get guaranteed that six-month course of free education. Nobody goes in anymore like the Civil War and goes, okay, you Irish guys, you're going to Calvary. You other mixed race of people, well, we're going to put you in the kitchen. They don't do that anymore. It's a guaranteed contract.
If we're backed into a corner,
We've never really been backed in a corner. No foreign military's ever landed on our ground. That's why we have no experience in this.
Except for when the Indians were around, that's the only time they had to load the ammunition and fight back. Don't forget the Japs and the Aleutian Islands. That's part of our ground. Yes, they were there, and Kiska and Attu, they were there. Okay, don't forget.
I'm glad
that
you know where the Aleutian Islands are on a globe, because I guess I do. I've heard of them. I've heard of Aleutian horses.
Well, the Jets were there for almost a year, and we got kicked them off of one, and then we went to the other one. They were gone. But yes, they were. And Americans were captured, and Americans died. When the Japs were there, and there wasn't anything we could do about it. We had nothing for there. Okay, so yes, they have come onto our soil.
We had American citizens on the Aleutian Islands, and our women were fighting back. I mean, any more than like a missionary?
Well, no, we didn't have any lady soldiers.
That's the point of the subject, Dave. We're talking about women in combat. Listen, you're a great guy. Give me a quick plug for Combat Comedians.
Okay, Combat Comedians. Basically, our byline is healing through humor. And if you just come down to our show, we've got Monroe Community College.
This is a worldwide show, Dave. Just plug your website or your Facebook page.
Okay, well, what it is just look up Combat Comedians, and they'll tell you about what we're doing, and it's part of our America's Vets and Pets program. Okay.
Yep, we like that too. Hey, Dave, thank you very much. I got the book already on the way. Maybe you'll get me in front of a mic, and I'll be twice as nervous as I am tonight.
You're doing a great job.
Thanks, Dave.
See ya.
The Military Exchange.
Welcome back to the Military Exchange, and I'm your host, Corporal Tim Thornton. ISIS fighters hiding amongst refugees pose terror threat. Breedlove. NATO's commander warned Tuesday that ISIS fighters hiding in the massive refugee flows from Syria and other areas posed an increasing terrorist threat to the U.S. and Europe. I think they, ISIS, are doing that today, Air Force General Philip Breedlove, NATO's supreme commander and also head of U.S. European Command, said in a testimony to Senate Armed Services Committee. I think every refugee flow needs to be looked at with an eye towards it could be taken advantage of by those who seek to do us harm. Breedlove said when asked by several committee members to comment on the hot-button political issue of asylum for refugees, Senator John McCain, an Arizona Republican and the panel's chairman, said that based on Breedlove's remarks, logic then compels us to assume the risk of attacks on the United States of America or European countries is significantly increased. Breedlove said, I would take Daesh at their word. They have stated they intend to attack the West, to include the U.S., and I believe they will take the opportunities to infiltrate the refugee flows. He was using another word used to describe the Islamic State in Iraq and Syria, or ISIS.
The Military Exchange.
Honey, how many times do I have to move your old army bag? It's taking up too much room in the closet.
It's a duffel bag. It's full of my old uniforms.
And are you going to wear them again?
Yeah, maybe. Someday.
Uh-huh. And what size do you wear now?
Whatever.
Honey, why don't you take them to Military Mike's? You're certainly there enough.
It's Iron Mike's, and at least he doesn't make comments about my weight.
Bring your old military gear down to Iron Mike's Military Exchange. They'll turn your old uniforms, gear, and military collectibles into cash. So if you drug it back from overseas and it doesn't fit your motif, we want it. Iron Mike's wants your Class A's, Alphas, Hammies, Fatigues, Utilities, Digis. We want your Deuce gear, Molly gear, Alice gear, Web gear. Bring in your Poly Pros, new boots, used boots. Heck, if it's green, camouflaged, or digital, we want it. Give it a good home. Use pre-enjoyed. Iron Mike's has a bin for it. Iron Mike's buys, sells, and trades. Iron Mike's Military Exchange, located in Canandaigua, New York. Check out all their newly acquired items at militaryexchange.co.
Welcome back to the Military Exchange, and I'm your host, Corporal Tim Thornton. Dogs of War, these five dogs of war took it to America's enemies. Working dogs are an integral part of modern military life. Dogs have been with humans into combat since before recorded history. Alexander the Great's dog, Paratus, took down a charging elephant. An unnamed Newfoundland rescued Napoleon during his escape from exile on the Isle of Elba. The dog of Robert the Bruce, yes, that's Robert the Bruce, defended the Scottish king from English troops. Here are five more pups whose bravery is awe-inspiring. Stubby. The war dog of war dogs, this American pit bull terrier was found as a stray on the Yale campus in 1917 and smuggled to France during World War I by his adoptive owner, Corporal John Robert Conroy. Stubby served with the 102nd Infantry Regiment in the trenches in France for 18 months and participated in 17 battles. He used his keen senses to warn his unit of poisonous gas attacks, incoming artillery fire, and to locate downed soldiers on the battlefield. He was promoted to sergeant, the highest rank achieved by a military animal at that time. After sniffing out a German spy in the trenches, Sergeant Stubby was wounded in the foreleg by retreating Germans throwing hand grenades and was also injured in mustard gas attacks. Because of that, he was issued his own specially designed gas mask. His handler smuggled him home after the war, soon after he met Presidents Woodrow Wilson, Calvin Coolidge, and Warren G. Harding in 1921. General John J. Pershing presented a gold medal from the Humane Education Society to Stubby. Stubby died in 1926. Chips. Chips was a collie German Shepherd, Siberian Husky mix, whose owner donated him for duty during World War II. He was trained as a sentry dog and deployed with the 3rd Infantry Division in North Africa, Sicily, Italy, France, and Germany. Later that year, during the invasion of Sicily, Chips and his handler were pinned down on the beach by an Italian machine gun team. Chips broke from his handler and jumped into the pillbox, attacking the gunners, which caused them to surrender. In the fight, he sustained a scalp wound and powder burns. Later that year, he helped take 10 Italians prisoner. Chips was awarded the Distinguished Service Cross, Purple Heart, and Silver Star for his actions. But unfortunately, the commendations were revoked as military policy at the time didn't allow such recognition for animals. Chips was discharged in 1945 and returned to his original family, who in turn gave Chips to his military handler, Private John R. Rowell. Kaiser. Kaiser was a German Shepherd and one of the 4,000 dogs who served in the Vietnam War. His handler was Marine Lance Corporal Alfredo Salazar. Kaiser and Salazar did more than 30 combat patrols and participated in 12 major operations together. After they joined D Company for a search and destroy mission, they were ambushed by the Viet Cong while on patrol in 1966. Kaiser was hit in the initial contact and died while trying to lick Salazar's hand. Kaiser was the first war dog killed in action during Vietnam. Nemo. On December 4th, 1966, Nemo and Airman Second Class Bob Thornburg were on patrol near an air base in Vietnam when they suddenly came under concentrated enemy fire. Nemo took a round to his eye while Thornburg was shot in the shoulder after killing two Viet Cong guerrillas. Nemo viciously jumped at the enemy, giving Thornburg time to call in reinforcements. After Thornburg fell unconscious, Nemo crawled on top of his body to protect him. The dog didn't let anyone touch his handler, and a veterinarian had to sedate Nemo so medics could attend to Thornburg. Both survived, and Nemo lived until 1972. Smokey. The unlikely hero at 4 pounds and 7 inches long, Yorkshire Terrier was initially found in February 1944 after being abandoned in a foxhole in New Guinea. The dog was purchased by Corporal William A. Wynn of Cleveland, Ohio, who backpacked with Smokey all over the Pacific campaign. Both living on a diet of sea rations and Spam, Smokey was a trooper, even running on coral ground for months without developing health issues. Smokey served in the South Pacific with the 5th Air Force, 26th Photo Recon Squadron, and flew 12 rescue and photo reconnaissance missions. Smokey was credited with 12 combat missions and awarded 8 battle stars. She survived 150 air raids on New Guinea and made it through a typhoon at Okinawa. Smokey even parachuted from 30 feet in the air out of a tree using a parachute made just for her. Wynn credited Smokey with saving his life by warning him of incoming shells on an LST, calling her an angel from a foxhole. On the Philippine island of Luzon, she pulled a telegraph wire through a narrow 70-foot pipe, saving construction time and keeping workers and engineers safe from enemy fire. She died in 1957 at the age of 14. There you have it. War dogs. Take good care of that dog at home. You just never know when that dog really will be your best combat buddy.
The Military Exchange.
Welcome back to the Military Exchange. I'm your host, Corporal Tim Thornton. 11 things I learned in Vietnam that made me more successful in my civilian career. Lieutenant General Robert Cushum, USMC, awarding the Legion of Merit to author James G. Van Stratton. Van Stratton is the author of A Different Face of War, Memories of a Medical Service Corps Officer in Vietnam. A new memoir described his service as a medical service corps during the early years of the Vietnam War, assigned as the senior medical advisor to the Army of the Republic of Vietnam in I Corps, an area close to the DMZ. He traveled extensively and interacted with military officers and non-commissioned officers, peasant-class farmers, Buddhist bonzes, shopkeepers, scribes, physicians, nurses, the mentally ill, and even political operatives. Daily letters that he wrote to his wife from July 1966 through June of 67 are detailed basis for his book. After he retired from the military in 1986, Van Stratton moved into the academia. In 1990, he was appointed Dean of the School of Allied Health Sciences at the University of Texas Health Science Center at San Antonio. In this article, he reflects on lessons learned during his service have helped his civilian career. All photos in the article are courtesy of James G. Van Stratton. Check it out on our Facebook page, The Military Exchange Talk Show. Fear is your worst enemy. Deal with it. Overcome it. 2. Follow your gut. If it feels wrong, it probably is. 3. When you enter new territory, if the indigenous people don't come out of their homes to greet you, be careful. Something is wrong. Never hold a grudge. It will only make your heart heavy and cloud your judgment. 5. Keep the well-being of your soldiers foremost in your mind. You're responsible for their lives. 6. Live in the moment. Be mindful of your surroundings. 7. Good and evil exist simultaneously in each person's mind. It's up to each individual to sort out the two and determine which path to follow. 8. Take care of your soldiers. Respect them and their work. It will be key to your success. Number 9, to succeed, sometimes to stay alive, you've got to make tough and timely decisions, usually with incomplete data. Number 10, bad assumptions can kill you. Number 11, study the issues before deciding on a course of action, but do decide. Do not delay or defer important decisions, or you will, in all likelihood, get burned by your indecision. A Different Face of War by James G. Van Stratton. And you can check out that and the photos that come with it at our Facebook page, Talk Show-The Military Exchange. And we'll be right back after these messages.
Hoorah! Semper Fi, do or die, hold them high at 8th and I. Gunnery Sergeant Arlie Ermey here.
The Military Exchange.
.com. What would we do without them? You better check it out. I'm not going to tell you about it. You just have to check it out for yourself. Hoorah! Semper Fi. Have a great day.
Clerico, can I get a drink? Sumatra, pull down the shades. Duro, lock the door. We're gonna party. Can you hear me? How long I've been up? Welcome! Enlisted and officers, WMs and Devil Dogs, I'm Corporal Tim Thornton, your host for tonight. This is the DD214 and Laurel Cigar Lounge, fresh from the Dominican Republic, Hickory Motto Cigars, here at the Military Exchange in Canandaigua, New York. The smoking lamp is out. Welcome to the Military Exchange Talk Show, and I'm your host, Corporal Tim Thornton, and I'm here today with combat comedians David DeFranco. He's the creator and the host. Combat comedians, as you can see right here, this is a great outfit. This is something I'm very interested in. And Dave, you have the floor.
Well, Tim, thank you very much for having me here. I just want to say how proud we are of our combat comedians program. We're progressing very well. Our logo is Healing Through Humor, and that's what we do. We help veterans to get their feelings out. We teach them stand-up comedy, and by teaching them to find humor in everyday life, it lessens the blow of the reintegration coming back from wherever they were back into society. And I tell you, they're coming out through, and we've got some people and some good shows coming up, including one on the 19th of March. That's going to be at the post number 942 in Webster, New York. It's right on 818 Ridge Road. And we're going to have some really big-time guys there, including Clay Miles. He's coming up. He's a veteran. 9 years in Afghanistan. He's coming up from Washington, D.C., 7-hour drive, do this show, spend a night, and go back down, and also to become one of our combat comedians crew. Seems like every day we're getting more and more people are coming from around the country who want to join us, so that what we have is a group of veterans who are raising money for veterans.
That's very nice. Now, tell us a little bit about the charity behind what you're doing. You're doing a great thing for vets by doing this, but I want to talk about that in a minute. But behind that, you're helping raise money with the Salvation Army.
Salvation Army. This is for the American Red Cross's kit program.
Okay.
What they do is, it's something that the folks down on Prince Street in Rochester, they oversee all 26 counties of Western and Central New York. They distribute these two types of comfort kits to our veterans. We have a hospital kit, which is a bathrobe, slippers, and things like that. And also we have, for the homeless and those veterans that are in shelters, warm clothing, fleece gloves, hats, sweatshirts, thermal underwear. In other words, they try to address the needs for all the veterans, and that's why they refer to us comfort kits. They're the only Red Cross is doing it in the nation, but they certainly would love to see all of the chapters in this country take care of all the veterans. We're there to help them. If we can do it, if we can get enough support regionally, then we can go on a national program and start helping all of the veterans.
That's very nice. Now, okay, so now back to kind of what you do, right? So I almost got this, but I envision things quick, and I'm trying to understand this. So you got a guy like myself, okay, he's a veteran, seen good times, bad times, whatever. You get him up on stage. I know you work with him beforehand.
Right.
It's not cold turkey.
Like, oh, no, no. We
throw you to the wolves.
We actually have workbooks. Our instructor is Ralph Tetta. He's got over 25 years of experience. He worked with George Carlin for 14 years as his manager and joke writer. He knows all about this kind of stuff. So we actually teach them performance, joke writing, even the ins and outs of contracts and agents, so that they actually have quite a lot of ammunition before they even get up to the microphone.
So a guy gets up there. Now, he writes his own jokes?
Oh, yeah.
Help him?
We help with show them the formats, like first start with a premise. What is a premise? A premise is, my wife hates me. Well, why? And you make examples of it, but we show them how to make it funny, okay? Or, my job sucks, and that's your premise. And why? And then you come up with it, but you turn it around. And as you turn it around to find the funny, then maybe you can deal with your job a little better, because you know now you can blow it off, where before all you were is a boiling steam pot because you couldn't take it. Now you can, because now you're like, oh yeah, I can think of something funny about that. And it helps them deal with life, especially if they're reintegrating into society. By finding that humor, you can find that silver lining.
Wow, that's really good. Tell us, do you have a little bit of a skit or something you could throw out there?
Well,
on a cuff?
For myself, I
Well, leave it. You're a Vietnam veteran.
No, I'm not. I am actually the one person who's not a veteran. But
okay.
My whole family, my father, my brother, my two children, veterans. If you see, we have a mix of civilians and veterans, because what better way to reintegrate into society than working alongside of civilians?
Yeah.
And what happens is,
right,
the civilians also get to learn firsthand by working with the veterans about their experiences. They work as a team. One is learning the other one's lifestyle, and the other one's coming back to the original. But there's a give and take for both, and they both become enlightened.
Yep, that's the nature of our radio show, where we like to uplift the way the veteran looks in the eyes of his civilian counterpart.
Yeah, right.
By introducing them together, doing things together.
Right.
That's great.
Exactly it. And the thing is, you know, when you're coming back from a place where people have been throwing bullets at you and stuff, maybe you don't want to tell your kids about that, you know, when they're 5 years old, about those experiences. Maybe you can't even tell your wife. Maybe you can't even tell your friends, because now you feel a little alienated because they have no idea what you've been through. Somebody should know, and it seems like the only people that you can tell are other veterans. And they're doing the same thing. We can't find anybody else to talk to. But when you go on stage, people who are listening for a comedy show, they're prepared to be shocked. Go ahead, shock us. Tell us something we don't know. And it works out great, because their experiences are something they don't know. And they're all ears. And then they're like, oh, that's why this guy that we know maybe does this, or that person does that. No! That's why they jump when somebody slams a door. We just thought it was nerves. Maybe it's something else, okay? They come away from listening to the experiences of our veterans on stage with a greater understanding. And on the same token, the veterans, by being in a room full of people who are not judging them by anything but funny, not if they're missing an arm or a leg, got an eye missing, or maybe they're a little scrambled topside, nobody is judging them because of that. They just want to see, are you funny? And if you can concentrate on being the funny, it takes all the pressure off all those other things you thought were just so important. Okay? And life's not that hard to deal with.
I agree. I think dealing with life through comedy or through laughter, expressing yourself, I probably started my radio show for the same reason,
because right, healing is what you're looking for.
Healing through humor.
Healing through humor. I'm a big proponent of keeping a journal and writing stuff down, getting your thoughts out there. And then later, you know, one of the things about vets, they come in here all the time, and we're always making each other laugh. We're always having a good time. And, you know, you're not going to tell your worst day right off the bat.
No.
If ever.
No.
That's for you. You keep it in your little closet. It's a skeleton. But you know what? There was other days. There were days that you just were on the bus and some guy fell asleep and he woke up with a banana on his shoulder. You know, there's always something
right.
That's funny.
Right.
And then you start to focus more on the good stuff
right.
And less on the bad stuff.
Right.
Now, if you can take a joke, I mean, if you can tell a joke from your worst day, well, then I'd say you're doing good.
Sure, sure.
And I would applaud that.
Well, it seems to just work across the board. And, you know, by us doing like this show we're doing here for the American Red Cross and some down the pike we're going to be doing too, we're trying to raise $95,000 for the comfort kits for the American Red Cross for our veterans. And now as our people are learning their trade, they also get a sense of pride knowing that they're raising money. So what they're doing is not just enjoyable and they're getting their voice out, but they're also applying their newfound skill to something viable. It's veterans helping veterans.
I like that. So how do people get a hold of you for the Red Cross?
Well, the main thing is this. If you have any questions, you can look up the American Red Cross on Prince Street. You can look them up on their website. If you want to find out about the show, you can go to Facebook and look up Combat Comedians, and it shows the date and times for the show that's coming up. My phone number's on there. Anytime you want, you can check it out. Call me, 585-319-2572. Call me, leave a message. The thing is that this thing is in its infancy, and as we add more and more layers to it, now the Veterans Administration is getting involved with this, the Veterans Outreach is getting involved with this, we've got the American Legion, the VFW, more and more things were coming together, and everything is a can-do spirit. It's like, well, we can do this, and we can do that, and we're going to show folks that, you know, the veterans that came back, they weren't just useful over there. They can do an awful lot of good here. Just give them a chance. Just give them a chance to see. Let them reintegrate, and then watch how they help your community just by being part of it.
So who's the, I'm going to throw the answer, I think, but who's the big guy? Who's the veteran, the funniest veteran comedian out there?
Well, you mean as part of our group?
Well, or even bigger.
Well, Drew Carey from The Price is Right is a veteran.
Yep.
Okay? But Clay Miles that we've got coming up here, I remember, before I even got this thing going, I remember watching him about 4 years ago when he was at the comedy club in Empire Boulevard, and he hit the whole weekend. It was his, you know, he was the headliner for the weekend. So good was he that he got a standing ovation. I've never seen a comedian before or since, okay? And I'm talking even when Adam Sandler was there. No one did it like this gentleman here, and yet here's a guy who spent 9 years overseas, and then he even spent 3 years as a civilian after he came out of the Marines just to keep the things going because he knew he could apply himself and they needed his talents. So it's all about commitment. And we don't gauge the level of humor because it's always intriguing. It's always amazing. You know, comedy is the hardest of the art forms. It's not like a toe-tapping song that everybody likes. You know, if you play the song the way someone else did it, they like your music because you're doing what they did. It's an unwritten rule that you don't use anyone else's jokes. You come up with your own material. And the funny thing about jokes, when you're addressing the same people, you can only tell that joke once. So you got to make some more stuff right off the bat. You can't come right back to the same people with that same joke. Oh, I've heard that one before, or they'll cut you off. So you have to be very, very resourceful. And when you get into a room, you have no idea what is going to make those people laugh because they're all ages. They come from all different parts of society. How do you find that funny bone without offending anybody. That's really hard, okay? And then the veterans do the same thing. How do I tell people about what I have experienced in a funny way without offending anybody or shocking them to the point where they got to leave the room? As they tread that skinny line, they find their way back into society. And the next thing they know, it's like, I was that guy who used to have a hard time speaking my mind. Now I'm going to help. They become mentors. Now I'm going to help the new guy through his little journey. And that's how it is. As they graduate my course, they become mentors for the next guys and the next gals.
That's great, Dave.
Yeah.
Okay, so Dave DeFranco, Combat Comedians, Healing Through Humor. Tell us your website one more time so everybody knows how to get hold of you.
Just look on the Facebook if you want for Combat Comedians, or you can eventually, we're almost done with our domain site, which would be probably in about another week, and that will be AmericasVetsAndPetsProgram.com.org, because we also raise money for animal shelters, and eventually we're going to have our third leg of our program, which is going to be putting together veterans who need company with shelter animals, and that's our Pets for Vets program. And that's going to be the one that's going to combine our two functions that we do with the veterans and the animals. And when we do our Pets for Vets program, both of them will get a forever home together, undying love. And that's going to be the one that really is going to bring in a lot of the animal lovers and to support our veterans too. There's another group of people that could really, really help the veterans with their cause and provide a good audience. We've already had some veterans work as fundraisers for animal shelters, crossing over. That's another good cause.
They need to get out in the community,
right,
and do stuff for the community.
Right, and they see this. That's now right. The people are seeing the veterans.
It's not a one-way street where the vet comes home and the community is always doing for him. The vet, this guy who was a great leader when he was in, he has ethos and ethics, and he knows how to take charge. He needs to step into the community and be a great example and an ambassador,
right,
as a military veteran.
Right.
That's what we want. We want our guys to come out.
We provide them the show so they can do it.
Very good. Thank you, Dave.
My pleasure.
Welcome back to the Military Exchange, and I'm your chaplain for the evening, Corporal Tim Thornton. This is a brief discussion about the beard. It is an important issue because it is part of Scripture. All Scripture is given by inspiration of God, 2 Timothy 3:16. The beard is mentioned about 19 times in the Old Testament and none in the New Testament. There is a reference to Messiah's beard in Isaiah 56, which gives us a New Testament principle, considering Jesus Christ is our example to follow. 1 Peter 2:21, Psalm 133:2. The beard is used as an illustration in the context of blessings, favor, and unity. This beautiful psalm speaks of the unity of the brethren, and God speaks well of the beard throughout Holy Scripture. God's people had beards: Aaron the high priest, David the king, 1 Samuel, Ezra the scribe, and Christ the Messiah, Isaiah 56. Men may not destroy the hair of their beards and unnaturally change the form of a man. For the law says, you will not deface your beards. For God the Creator has made this decent for women, but has determined that it is unsuitable for men. Now, the origin of the beard. To begin with, the beard is part of God's original design and creation. God is the author and creator of the beard, and to speak against it is to speak against God himself. In Genesis 1:1, 26-28, God created man, male and female, in his own image, and placed them in paradise. The man was created with a beard, and woman was created without one. A woman cannot grow a beard unless there is a hormonal imbalance due to age, sickness, or disease. God caused the beard to grow genetically on a man's face. There is a divine regulation in the Bible concerning the beard, showing its importance. Leviticus 19:27. 21:5. It is assumed in Scripture that man will grow a beard. The beard is commanded in Scripture and not prohibited. It is the norm and not unusual. To alter the beard is to change the way God created us. The purpose of the beard. There are a number of reasons why God gave men beards, and we will consider a few. First, the beard is given as a distinction between a man and a woman, Deuteronomy 22:5. The woman shall not wear that which pertaineth unto a man, neither shall a man put on a woman's garment. For all that do so are an abomination unto the Lord thy God. A man with short hair and a beard cannot be mistaken. The unisex look destroys and blurs the distinction between the sexes. The beard is a clear mark of masculinity, for the smooth face is naturally given to women and children. The biblical law created a hedge between the confusing of the sexes. The text is given to maintain the sanctity of the distinction between a man and a woman that was made at creation. An author stated in reference to distinction was, "The lion is glorious in his mane. Without it, he's just another cat. Not the king of beasts, just so. God has marked the male in his image, not by a crown on his head, but by the beard on his chin. Male distinctions are seen in clothing, hair length, and the beard." Revelation 9:7-8. Second, the beard is given to a man for a covering, a protection from the elements because his work and labor. It serves as a natural sunscreen. Many outdoorsmen, such as loggers, hunters, and farmers, can testify to this fact. Third, the beard is a sign of maturity. It shows the change from boyhood to adulthood. With maturity, the beard voluntarily begins to grow. It is God's design for the beard to stay underdeveloped during childhood. Have you ever noticed how excited a boy gets when he discovers? Have you ever wondered why they get so excited? Well, it's because God put hair on the face to show the transition from boyhood to manhood. It is always amusing to watch a young man as he starts discovering the changes in his face. He may not fully understand what it's all about, but he does know it is important. The word elder is from a Hebrew word very similar to the Hebrew word for beard. For an elder is a bearded one, once again, maturity. Fourth, the beard was the badge of manly dignity. To shave or cover the beard was a sign of grief or mourning. To compel a man to cut off his beard was to inflict shame and disgrace. To neglect the beard was a sign that something was very wrong. 2 Samuel 19:24, 1 Samuel 21:13. To damage the beard willfully was a sign of mourning. Ezra 9:3, Isaiah 15:2, Jeremiah 41:5. The beard was a badge of honor and respect, and the beard was common and normal among God's people. Fifth, the beard represented authority in the order of creation. 1 Corinthians 11:3. Headship is a part of God's order, and the appearance of the man identifies him as the head and leader. God forbids the shaving of the beard. "Ye shall not round the corners of your heads, neither shall thou mar the corners of thy beard." Leviticus 21:5. "They shall not make baldness upon their head, neither shall they shave off the corner of their beard, nor make any cuttings in their flesh." Conclusion. Christians must learn to think biblically and not be swayed by society. John 5:24, Isaiah 5:20. The beard is part of Holy Scripture, and early church writers spoke much of it. Most preachers throughout church history wore beards. Charles Spurgeon had a beard and required his deacons also to wear beards. Today, most denominations frown upon the beard, saying it is a sign of rebellion because many hippies in the 1960s wore beards. But some of these hippies wore clothes and brushed their teeth. Notice I said some. Does this make those practices wrong also? The abuses of the beard does not give right to discard it. There are abuses of the ordinances that we don't cast out, baptism and the Lord's Supper, because others abuse it. The world hates biblical masculinity. And war has been declared on the beard in many circles. It is taboo to most Christians. Another author made this estimation. If you took a pictorial survey from the time of Christ until the present time of all the preachers of the gospel, you would find about 80 to 90% of them wore beards. The objections people give against the beard are shallow in human reasoning, such as looks, bad, itchy, gets dirty, only bad guys wear beards, my wife doesn't like it, etc. I challenge you to consider Bible dictionaries and other writings on the subject. They may give you a scriptural understanding of God's ways. Isaiah 55, 8-9. One author in the 1800s stated that shaving is an unnatural, irrational, unmanly, ungodly, and a fatal fashion among Christians. The Universal Jewish Encyclopedia states, "The glory of the face is the beard." A quote taken from the Dictionary of Early Christian Beliefs by Clement of Alexandria states, "This then is the mark of the man, the beard. By this, he is seen to be a man. It is older than Eve. It is the token of the superior nature. It is therefore unholy to desecrate the symbol of manhood, hairness. Believe on the Lord Jesus Christ, and thou shalt be saved and thy house. Acts 16:31.
You've been listening to the Military Exchange Talk Show, Iron Mike's Military Exchange on Route 332 in Canandaigua, New York. Listen to our podcast and watch our video show at the Military Exchange Talk Show on YouTube and themilitaryexchange.com, our personal website. To contact Corporal Tim Thornton, send an email to themilitaryexchange@gmail.com.